Chapter 145. A few grains of pepper, the doll's dressmaker went no more to the business premises of Pupsy and Company in Street Mary X, after Chance had disclosed to her, as she supposed, the flinty and hypocritical character of Mr. Raya. She often moralized over her work on the tricks and the manners of that venerable cheat, but made her little purchases elsewhere, and lived a secluded life. After much consultation with herself, she decided not to put Lizzie Hexam on her guard against the old man, arguing that the disappointment of finding him out would come upon her quite soon enough. Therefore, in her communication with her friend by letter, she was silent on this theme, and principally dilated on the backslidings of her bad child, who every day grew worse and worse. "You wicked old boy," apostrophe Miss Wren would say to him, with a menacing forefinger, "you'll force me to run away from you after all, you will, and then you'll shake to bits, and there'll be nobody to pick up the pieces." At this foreshadowing of a desolate decease, the wicked old boy would whine and whimper, and would sit shaking himself into the lowest of low spirits, until such time as he could shake himself out of the house, and shake another threepenny worth into himself. But dead drunk or dead sober, he had come to such a pass, that he was least alive in the latter state. It was always on the conscience of the paralytic scarecrow, that he had betrayed his sharp parent for 63 pennyworths of rum, which were all gone, and that her sharpness would infallibly detect his having done it, sooner or later. All things considered, therefore, and addition made of the state of his body to the state of his mind, the bed on which Mr. Dawes reposed was a bed of roses from which the flowers and leaves had entirely faded, leaving him to lie upon the thorns and stalks. On a certain day, Miss Wren was alone at her work, with the house door set open for coolness, and was trolling in a small sweet voice a mournful little song which might have been the song of the doll she was dressing, bemoaning the brittleness and meltability of wax, when whom should she descry standing on the pavement, looking in at her, but Mr. Fledgeby. "I thought it was you?" said Fledgeby, coming up the two steps. "Did you?" Miss Wren retorted. "And I thought it was you, young man. Quite a coincidence. You're not mistaken, and I'm not mistaken. How clever we are. Well, and how are you?" said Fledgeby. "I am pretty much as usual, sir," replied Miss Wren. "A very unfortunate parent, worried out of my life and senses by a very bad child." Fledgeby's small eyes opened so wide that they might have passed for ordinary sized eyes, as he stared about him for the very young person whom he supposed to be in question. "But you're not a parent," said Miss Wren, "and consequently it's of no use talking to you upon a family subject. To what am I to attribute the honor and favor? To a wish to improve your acquaintance," Mr. Fledgeby replied. Miss Wren, stopping to bite her thread, looked at him very knowingly. "We never meet now," said Fledgeby. "Do we?" said Miss Wren, chopping off the word. "So I had a mind," pursued Fledgeby, "to come and have a talk with you about our dodging friend, the child of Israel." "So he gave you my address, did he?" asked Miss Wren. "I got it out of him," said Fledgeby, with a stammer. "You seem to see a good deal of him," remarked Miss Wren, with shrewd distrust. "A good deal of him, you seem to see, considering." "Yes, I do," said Fledgeby. "Considering." "Haven't you?" Inquired the dressmaker, bending over the doll on which her art was being exercised. "Done intersitting with him yet?" "No," said Fledgeby, shaking his head. "La! Been intersitting with him all this time, and sticking to him still?" said Miss Wren, busy with her work. "Sticking to him is the word," said Fledgeby. Miss Wren pursued her occupation with a concentrated air, and asked, after an interval of silent industry, "Are you in the army?" "Not exactly," said Fledgeby, rather flattered by the question. "Navy?" asked Miss Wren. "And no," said Fledgeby. He qualified these two negatives, as if he were not absolutely in either service, but was almost in both. "What are you then?" demanded Miss Wren. "I am a gentleman, I am," said Fledgeby. "Oh," assented Jenny, screwing up her mouth with an appearance of conviction. "Yes, to be sure. That accounts for your having so much time to give to intersitting. But only to think how kind and friendly a gentleman you must be." Mr. Fledgeby found that he was skating round a board marked dangerous, and had better cut out a fresh track. "Let's get back to the Dodgerist of the Dodgers," said he. "What's he up to in the case of your friend the handsome gal? He must have some object. What's his object?" "Cannot undertake to say, sir, I am sure," returned Miss Wren, composedly. "He won't acknowledge where she's gone," said Fledgeby, "and I have a fancy that I should like to have another look at her. Now I know he knows where she is gone." "Cannot undertake to say, sir, I am sure." Miss Wren again rejoined. "And you know where she is gone," hazarded Fledgeby. "Cannot undertake to say, sir, really," replied Miss Wren. The quaint little chin met Mr. Fledgeby's gaze with such a baffling hitch that agreeable gentleman was for some time at a loss how to resume his fascinating part in the dialogue. At length he said, "Miss Jenny, that's your name, if I don't mistake?" "Probably you don't mistake, sir," was Miss Wren's cool answer, "because you had it on the best authority. Mine, you know. Miss Jenny. Instead of coming up and being dead, let's come out and look alive. It'll pay better, I assure you," said Fledgeby, bestowing an inveigling twinkle or two upon the dressmaker. "You'll find it pay better." "Perhaps," said Miss Jenny, holding out her doll at arm's length, uncritically contemplating the effect of her art with her scissors on her lips and her head thrown back, as if her interest lay there, and not in the conversation. "Perhaps you'll explain your meaning, young man, which is Greek to me. You must have another touch of blue in your trimming, my dear." Having addressed the last remark to her fair client, Miss Wren proceeded to snip at some blue fragments that lay before her, among fragments of all colors, and to thread a needle from a skein of blue silk. "Look here," said Fledgeby. "Are you attending?" "I am attending, sir," replied Miss Wren, without the slightest appearance of so doing. "Another touch of blue in your trimming, my dear." "Well, look here," said Fledgeby, rather discouraged by the circumstances under which he found himself pursuing the conversation. "If you're attending, light blue, my sweet young lady," remarked Miss Wren, in a sprightly tone, "being best suited to your fair complexion and your flaxen curls." "I say, if you're attending," proceeded Fledgeby, "it'll pay better in this way. It'll lead in a roundabout manner to your buying damage and waste of Pupsy and Company at a nominal price, or even getting it for nothing." "Aha!" Thought the dressmaker. "But you are not so roundabout, little eyes, that I don't notice you're answering for Pupsy and Company after all. Little eyes, you're too cunning by half." "And I take it for granted," pursued Fledgeby, "that to get the most of your materials for nothing would be well worth your while, Miss Jenny?" "You may take it for granted," returned the dressmaker with many knowing nods, that it's always well worth my while to make money. Apostrophe, now, apostrophe, said Fledgeby approvingly, you're answering to a sensible purpose. Now, you're coming out and looking alive. So I make so free, Miss Jenny, as to offer the remark that you and Judah were too thick together to last. You can't come to be intimate with such a deep file as Judah without beginning to see a little way into him, you know, apostrophe, said Fledgeby with a wink. I must own, apostrophe, returned the dressmaker, with her eyes upon her work, that we are not good friends at present. Apostrophe, I know you're not good friends at present, apostrophe, said Fledgeby. I know all about it. I should like to pay off Judah by not letting him have his own deep way in everything. In most things he'll get it by hook or by crook, but hang it all. Don't let him have his own deep way in everything. That's too much. Apostrophe, Mr. Fledgeby said this with some display of indignant warmth, as if he was counsel in the cause for virtue. How can I prevent his having his own way? Apostrophe, apostrophe, began the dressmaker. Deep way, I called it, apostrophe, said Fledgeby. Apostrophe, his own deep way, in anything? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I'll tell you, apostrophe, said Fledgeby. I like to hear you ask it, because it's looking alive. It's what I should expect to find in one of your sagacious understanding. Now, candidly. Apostrophe, eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Miss Jenny. I said, now candidly, apostrophe, Mr. Fledgeby explained, a little put out. Oh, apostrophe, apostrophe, I should be glad to countermine him, respecting the handsome gal, your friend. He means something there. You may depend upon it, Judah means something there. He has a motive, and of course his motive is a dark motive. Now, whatever his motive is, it's necessary to his motive. Mr. Fledgeby's constructive powers were not equal to the avoidance of some tautology here, that it should be kept from me, what he has done with her. So I put it to you, who know? What has he done with her? I ask no more. And is that asking much, when you understand, that it will pay? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Miss Jenny Wren, who had cast her eyes upon the bench again after her last interruption, sat looking at it, needle in hand but not working, for some moments. She then briskly resumed her work, and said with a sidelong glance of her eyes and chin at Mr. Fledgeby. Where do you live? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Albany, Piccadilly, apostrophe, replied Fledgeby. When are you at home? Apostrophe, apostrophe, when you like. Apostrophe, breakfast time? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Jenny, in her abruptest and shortest manner. No better time in the day, apostrophe, said Fledgeby. I'll look in upon you tomorrow, young man. Those two ladies, apostrophe, pointing to dolls, have an appointment in Bond Street at 10 precisely. When I've dropped them there, I'll drive round to you. With a weird little laugh, Miss Jenny pointed to her crutch stick as her equipage. This is looking alive indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Fledgeby, rising. Mark you. I promise you nothing, apostrophe, said the doll's dressmaker, dabbing two dabs at him with her needle, as if she put out both his eyes. No, no. I understand, apostrophe, returned Fledgeby. The damage and waste question shall be settled first. It shall be made to pay. Don't you be afraid. Good day, Miss Jenny. Apostrophe, good day, young man. Apostrophe, Mr. Fledgeby's prepossessing form withdrew itself, and the little dressmaker, clipping and snipping and stitching and snipping and clipping, fell to work at a great rate, musing and muttering all the time. Misty, Misty, Misty. Can't make it out. Little Eyes and the Wolf in a conspiracy? Or Little Eyes and the Wolf against one another? Can't make it out. My poor Lizzie, have they both designs against you, either way? Can't make it out. Is Little Eyes Pupsy and the Wolf company? Can't make it out. Pupsy true to company, and company to Pupsy? Pupsy false to company, and company to Pupsy? Can't make it out. What said Little Eyes? Now, candidly? Ah! However, the cat jumps. He's a liar. That's all I can make out at present. But you may go to bed in the Albany, Piccadilly, with that for your pillow, young man. Apostrophe apostrophe thereupon, the little dressmaker again dabbed out his eye separately, and making a loop in the air of her thread, and deftly catching it into a knot with her needle, seemed to bowstring him into the bargain. For the terrors undergone by Mr. Dawes, that evening when his little parent sat profoundly meditating over her work, and when he imagined himself found out, as often as she changed her attitude, or turned her eyes towards him, there is no adequate name. Moreover, it was her habit to shake her head at that wretched old boy, whenever she caught his eye as he shivered and shook. What are popularly called the trembles being in full force upon him that evening, and likewise what are popularly called the horrors, apostrophe he had a very bad time of it, which was not made better by his being. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.